A special Thanksgiving message today on the Ultimate Ground Rules.
But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. Welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules, a podcast built specifically to encourage, empower, and strengthen the faith of coaches as they live out their God-given purpose to develop the next generation of leaders. And now, your host, Dave Pritchard.
Hello, and welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules. I am your host, Dave Pritchard, and today I share with you a conversation with Ryan McGinnis, athletic director and head baseball coach at Kimberly High School in Wisconsin. Coach McGinnis shares a very impactful message as he shares some of his baseball journey and tackles why he coaches, the impact that his faith has on what he does, what players need most from their coach, along with practical information for young coaches out there. You are truly going to be blessed today, so grab your pen and paper and prepare to take notes as the Ultimate Ground Rules presents Coach Ryan McGinnis.
All right, guys, I'm here today with Ryan McGinnis. He's the athletic director and head baseball coach at Kimberly High School in Wisconsin, former ABCA convention speaker. And Coach McGinnis, kind of what piqued my interest in getting you on the podcast was just listening to you on your ABCA Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And I would highly encourage any of our listeners to go back and check that out. I think it's episode 92 that aired back in July of 2018. And Coach, on that podcast, you kind of talked about, you know, your journey as a coach, preparing your players for life beyond high school. And really what caught my ear was you spoke a little bit about your faith. And I thought, man, I'd love to get that guy on and just kind of dig into that a little bit. If you want to take a second, Coach, and just kind of introduce yourself and just tell our listeners, you know, a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, appreciate it, Dave, and it's great being on. Appreciate you doing the podcast. You know, I've listened to a previous one, and that's I'm excited to listen to more. I've been coaching now, I think, for 24 years, and grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin, and part of a big family, loved baseball, was in a minor league town where they had a minor league baseball team and was a bat boy and kind of grew up around the park. And my dad was a coach and just a great childhood. And then I played for a legendary high school coach. And in a, you know, in Appleton, it was a city that had a great youth program. You know, at the time it was just that old school little league, and you played wiffle ball and stuff in the neighborhood with your buddies, but just a lot of good youth coaches, but a legendary high school coach that had a big impact on me. And then, you know, just an outstanding college coach as well. And then I coached in the college world for 4 years and worked on my master's degree. And then, you know, eventually knew I wanted to be a high school coach and hopefully one day run my own program, which I've been blessed to do. And so we moved back to Wisconsin, and I actually got my first head coaching job at Oshkosh North High School, which is where my wife went, about a half hour from where I grew up. And just a great community, and coached there for 6 years. And then I moved to kind of back near I was from in Appleton, but I'm at Kimberly High School, which when I was playing was a real small kind of farming paper mill community of about 500 kids. And it played in a conference, you know, where it was always playing bigger schools. And then Kimberly grew and now is about 1600. And so I came back and got a job at Kimberly High School. At that time, it was growing and progressing as a district. And I think just a really great place for kids and to raise a family. So I've been here for, I think this is my 14th year in Kimberly. Yeah, so it's been a great journey and certainly learned a lot along the way, and hopefully we can talk a little bit about some of those things. But as we all do in coaching, and you well know, we still are learning a ton every day and trying to get better.
Absolutely. If you kind of look back at, you know, just you can briefly touch on that journey, you know, thinking about, you know, from both a baseball standpoint and also from a faith standpoint, spiritual standpoint, who are your mentors? Who would you consider your mentor? I think one of the things I like to talk about coaches a lot is how mentors have been important to me, and you know, as a coach, to ever think that you've got all the answers is a bad place to be. And I think sometimes young coaches are really missing out on that. So, you know, who played a big role in you in your life as in terms of coaching and not only that, but just your faith?
Yeah. Well, you know, first and foremost, my parents, you know, when I was raised, I mean, we were a church going family, and my mom taught religion class, and as I look back on it now, I mean, obviously from a perspective as a kid, I could tell you about that. But as I look back on it now, I mean, my read on it now was we were a pretty strong faith family. Didn't read the Bible together, you know, not that, but just believed in God and believed in doing the right thing and believed in telling the truth and going to church and seeing what my mom did and seeing how my dad lived. I think that was probably the greatest teacher. My mom went to Bible study every week. We had a priest who, you know, as a kid, he was pretty boring because he gave a long homily every Sunday. But, you know, we were altar boys, my brothers and I, and you know, so that was kind of the child in me on that. But just being around the people we were, you know, we always picked up an elderly woman who lived in an assisted care facility, picked her up for church every Sunday, she was a widow. And so just those examples of how to live and how to be selfless and some of that. But it wasn't really probably until college that I really dove into kind of owning it a little bit. I mean, from when I was a little kid, my mom and I were always had a special relationship. And, you know, I always said the rosary every night by myself in bed, or I would say with my mom once in a while. But, you know, I'd say the rosary and I'd pray and always prayed. Among other things, I always prayed for three things, you know, just to continue to stay healthy, to have a passion in life where I had a job that I would love, and to find a wife that was my best friend. And I look at that and I mean, I never had a girlfriend till high school, you know, so it wasn't like I was running around chasing the girls, but I'm thinking, why in the world did I always pray for those three things? And I think that was God making me wise, because you know, as you get older, if you're doing things you love every day, you don't work a day in your life. And so the influences, you know, so certainly my parents, for sure, and my siblings. You know, I was blessed to have brothers that were, you know, I was the fifth of six, and we had three girls, three boys, and I had brothers that were positive influences on me, and sisters that were as well, but, you know, especially close with my brothers. And you know, and then as I grew, like I said, my high school baseball coach was a real big influence in how to teach, and not so much from a faith standpoint, but just how to compete and how to prepare and how to be detailed and how to kind of go about your business each day. And then my college baseball coach was a big influence on me. And then there were lots of other, you know, influences along the way that helped guide kind of who I was. But one of the priests who my family became pretty close with was a pretty big influence too. You know, he always kept in touch when he left, and when I had some success in high school baseball, you know, I remember him dropping me a couple notes that I thought were pretty special that he remembered. And, you know, he had a human side to him. And, you know, that was, and his homilies were a little more interesting than the other priest, but the other priest was more of a biblical scholar. And that was one of the things. So as I got into college, one of the things I kind of realized was, you know, the Catholic Church doesn't do a great job of immersing us in the Bible. And, you know, I consider myself more of a Christian than just a Catholic. You know, I think, you know, just loving everyone and trying to live a godlike life as best we can. And we know we're going to be far from it, but just try to search that out and seek that out every day is really what drives me.
That's awesome. One thing that I heard you say there is that priest just remembering some little things or just some little notes. And one thing that I've come to realize the longer I've coached is how big the little things can be. You know, whether it be something that you do for a player or something that you say for a player, but what else, you know, how do you see your faith shaping what you do as a coach?
I mean, my faith is everything to me. So I think it shapes everything I do and the way that I do it. And, you know, one of the things that I've wrestled with, you know, over the years to make sure that I'm, you know, doing justice to God and my due diligence to give him the glory hopefully make him proud, is, you know, am I doing enough? And, you know, is it, I really feel strongly that as a public school coach and a public school, you know, when I was teaching, and now as an athletic director, that, that I want to be real respectful and diligent about not kind of forcing that faith on others. But, you know, I also believe that if you just live a life that would make God proud, you know, when we pray with our kids every night, you know, I some way, shape or form, you know, who's ever leading the prayer, you know, we all can say something or add our two cents, as I always want to add, you know, we pray that we make you proud. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, if we can try to make God proud in whatever we do, you know, that'll be, I don't know if it'll be enough. I don't think God asks us to do enough. But what I struggle with is am I really trying to, or am I really doing my due diligence at trying to help those who are lost, you know, and who are seeking, you know, God. And obviously, you know, you and I believe that you need God to have eternal life. And, you know, not every family believes that. And I want to respect that. So I do have such a strong faith that there's just nothing that I do that doesn't really isn't impacted by my faith. And so a lot of what we do doesn't always have to have a Bible verse. Just the simplicity of saying, but yet the complexity of saying love, you know, love every day and, you know, love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength and love others, you know, love the greatest, most popular, most influential person you're going to meet, love them, but even more so love the least, talented player that you have with all your heart and all your soul and give them as much time and as energy and as much compassion as you do the superstar. And so those are things that, you know, what I pray for is that when my players are gone, or my students as a teacher, or my coaches that I deal with now as an athletic director, or anybody else, that when they're done dealing with you, whenever that is, and there's no more, you know, who's got the power or who's got the say over this or that, that they can say, man, you know, he sure treated me with love and respect and a lot of empathy. And you know, I speak for myself in this. I fall very short on that every day. You know, I don't say that to try to act humble, or that's just the truth. You know, with three boys, and you know, you lay your head in a pillow and you could always do a little bit, something a little bit differently or a little bit better or a little bit, you know, compassionate or whatever to maybe make a result different with a conversation or whatever. But, I go down to bed every night knowing that I did my darndest to try with everybody that I interacted with to make it a positive.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's one of the things, again, the longer I coach, I think one of the things that I try to emphasize is the idea that, you know, my players know that I love them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, sometimes as guys, you know, that can be a little uncomfortable. And I've kind of taken that on. I don't know if it's the wiser I've gotten or just the older I've gotten, but, you know, it's okay to make your players uncomfortable in that arena.
Absolutely.
I think on some front, you know, I don't know if a responsibility is too strong of a word, but, you know, if we're not making them uncomfortable there, who is? You know, one thing I tell my parents a lot is, you know, when your kid, like you said, when your kid moves through and he's gone, you know, or even in the middle of the process, you may think that I'm not a very good coach, and you may question, you know, the decisions that we make as a coaching staff, you know, and there are people that are on the radio every day that get paid money to do that. That's inevitable, right? But the one thing, my goal with my program, it seems like you're saying the same thing. My major goal is, you know, when your kid is done or even in the middle of the process, you may question some things that we do from an athletic standpoint, but I don't want you to ever question the fact that we love your kids and we've got their best interests at heart.
Yeah. Amen to that.
And like you said, you know, you lay your head down the pillow every night and you just wonder, man, am I getting that across? You know, am I getting that across? And there's a intentionality there that I think that's the word, you know, that one area that we can improve on is intentionality. You know, because those things don't happen. It's no different than a practice plan. You don't walk out on the field and just say, what are we going to do today? know, you're not going to become a very good team if there's not intentionality behind everything you do. And so, you know, as we're trying to love our guys or just have an impact on them, you know, you've got to be intentional with every little thing that you do.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think those are some great, great points. And I think as you coach longer, you know, I think you realize, just like any other part of life, you know, just when you think you have it all figured out, it changes the questions. And, you know, it gets harder as you coach longer. And that's a fact. And it gets harder because you realize just how little you know sometimes about your players and about situations and about respect, about yourself. You know, we all come in with our own to coaching with our own biases. You know, I mean, just one example of that is, you know, I would say as I started coaching, you know, I thought I was a great listener and I thought I was very, very compassionate. And you look back at it now and say, man, you know, probably not so much, but you know, you had a whole bunch of passion and a whole bunch of energy and certainly heart was in the right place. But, you know, I probably had quite a few blind spots and, you know, one of those being, you know, just like the best players have probably blind spots for kids that struggle. I think guys that struggle like me, and it was hard work to be a good player, you know, and to crack the lineup and to just survive, you know, in a competitive environment. You know, sometimes when you see guys having it easy and taking it for granted and being entitled, you lack patience with those guys, and those guys need your gentle hand in a different way. They don't need to hammer, you know, necessarily. And so just learning how to ask questions and follow up and have more patience. And, you know, and I think along those lines of what you just said, you know, is when you say that to parents about, you know, you can question that and we're fine with it, and but we don't question loving, that we're going to love your son and have their best interests in mind. Well, you know, sometimes the player treats you differently if they're not playing too, and they become maybe a little edgier, a little disrespectful. And so you have to have that kind of, and that's where, as you get older, you have a better pulse of how to have that conversation about, you don't have to like the decision, but you can't take it out on the decision maker. And, you know, how you navigate through those conversations and understand you don't have, you know, because one of the other things I've started using the last few years is, because the foundation of our program is trust. And you can't have trust without communication, and you can't have trust without tough times. And trust is a word just like love. Those words are thrown around like, oh yeah, of course. And so really to get to what those mean and what those are takes time and takes energy and takes breaking things down and takes individual conversations and takes large group conversations. And what we, you know, one of the things that the last few years, you know, we've said to our families is, you know, communication's a two-way street in two ways. You have to be able to speak and you have to be able to listen, and you have to have someone on the other end that's willing to speak and willing to listen. And so we can't have, you know, just head shakers saying, oh yeah, coach, yeah, coach, yeah, coach. And then they go do their own thing. And then on top of that, they might be backstabbing you, you know, as they go do their own thing. That's not trust, nor is it communication. That's a farce, you know? So to get to that takes a lot of time and energy. And that's really the beauty of coaching is building those relationships. And when you get them, they sure are priceless.
Man, that's awesome right there. That's some good stuff. I want to ask you, maybe a loaded question here, but, as you see over time, as you've coached, as you see the culture shift, you know, just as far as society as a whole, you know, I know one thing that I've encountered more and more of, both as a teacher and as a coach, is, you know, lack of fathers or kids that are living with grandparents or just more of that. Not that, you know, hasn't always been around, but I think we've seen more and more of it. And just some of the things that we battle in terms of culture, you know, what do you think, and you can put your athletic director hat on here maybe, but what do you think players in today's day and age, what do they need the most from a coach?
I think they need love the most. And I'm not sure that's always been the case because I didn't coach 50 years ago, but I think they need love and I think they need to be held accountable. In today's world, I really, really think the kids are I think they, you know, those are needs I'm guessing they always needed. I think we all need to be loved. We weren't, you know, in the old school Lombardi, you know, the old Lombardi days didn't love his players. Well, you know what, when you dig on that a little bit, I think he did. And, you know, he did it in a little different way. You know, he barked and stuff out on the field, but you know, you read some of those books where those behind the doors conversations, and they were very transparent. And players didn't have agents, and he was, you know, it was Vince Lombardi's way. There's no question about it. But, you know, Paul Herning got away with a little bit more than others. So there wasn't quite the accountability you think there would be, you know, with a tough line guy like him. But I think he loved his players and they knew it. And he loved them through the hard work he and his staff put in and what he demanded of those guys and demanded of himself. And but what I think nowadays is, you know, kids, because of travel ball and investment of money and the multiple sport issue and all that other thing, I think kids just need to understand, why am I playing this? And I think they need to answer that question. What is this sport doing for me? And I think we need to ask our kids that question periodically. What is this program doing for you? What is the Kimberly baseball program doing for you? What is the Cumberland baseball program doing for you? You know, what is baseball doing for you? What are we doing for you? What are your teammates doing for you? And then, you know, once we hear that answer, then what are you doing for them? And what are you doing for it? Meaning the program. But sometimes I think these kids get in this vicious cycle and they know that mom and dad, you know, paid $1,000 for them to play on a travel team or whatever. And they paid for lessons or they bought a $400 bat and they just are playing because that's what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't want to sound like an old codger, and say, but you know, there was something to be said about when you went out and you played with your buddies and you umpired the game or refereed the game yourself, and the winner stayed on the court, the loser didn't, and it wasn't, you know, mom and dad trying to politicize the message or have them more money or, you know, get on the team that had more pull to get in better tournaments or all this other stuff. It was, man, you go to the neighborhood and you earned your way on the best team, and, you know, or you took some of the worst guys and you learned how to combine your talents to create the synergy you needed to beat the team that had most talent, you know, and those that didn't do it went and played marbles or something, you know, and I think there's something to be said for that because it's your choice to play. And I think we need to make sure these kids are still choosing to play. The game's about the players. And, you know, it's not about you and me as coaches. What we need to do is make sure we create and maintain a healthy culture. And we need to really keep our eye on that and manage that part of it and let the kids play. Man, I love the Major League MLB Network, the commercial where they said they had all the guys doing different things and then had Ken Griffey Jr. at the end say, stop the talk, let the kids play. And, you know, the message of the commercial was, man, let these young guys in Major League Baseball play the game and have some fun, you know, and I'm a little bit old school, so don't get me wrong, that we don't need guys out there showboating all the time, but a little bit of flair is not a bad thing if it's genuine and if it's because they love competing and just let the kids play, man. And, you know, make sure that we're doing it, you know, in the spirit of the game and with some class, but energy and emotion and passion is a great thing.
Man, I couldn't agree more with that. One of the things that probably has impacted me more than anything from a coaching standpoint this past year was my 8-year-old got an opportunity to play on the All-Star team this past summer. And so it was really cool for me to just be a fan, you know, and take all that in and watching. The one thing that really stuck out to me watching a bunch of 8-year-olds play in June was it was just pure enjoyment. Yeah, you watch them on the field and you watch them in the dugout, and pretty close to regardless of score, they were having a great time. And you could tell it. You could tell by the body language, where they carried themselves, they were just having a great time playing baseball. And I'm watching that, and I was just thinking to myself, you know, as much as we're trying to do things the right way, I wonder if we're missing something sometimes, because we do want to win and we do want to take this serious, and it's not something that we just do to do. But at the same time, we're missing some of that enjoyment element. Going back to that question that you were talking about, you know, why do you play? Why do you play? And I'm glad you brought that up. It makes me feel a little better. But we encounter the same. I think, you know, I encounter some guys that really struggle to answer that question. And I don't think that enough guys, and maybe as coaches, we're not doing a good enough job, and I don't think enough guys really stop to entertain that. It kind of goes with the culture today. It's just busy, busy, busy. Like you said, I'm just doing because I'm supposed to do. But I think you're spot on there. You know, there's that balance. We've got to make sure that the guys are playing for the right reason, and at the same time that they're enjoying what they're doing. You know, it's pretty hard for, you know, us going back to that concept of, you know, I want my guys to know that I love them. Well, it's a pretty hard concept for them to grasp if they're not having a good time doing what they're doing.
That's right. Well, and along with that, you know, I think it's important that they know that we love them.
Absolutely.
As people. We don't love the baseball player. We love them as people. They play baseball. They're not a baseball player. They play baseball. They're hopefully a whole heck of a lot more than a baseball player. And I think, you know, I think especially in, you know, I'm assume your school's the same. You know, we're in a pretty tight-knit community. And, you know, kids look up to the, and we talk about this with our athletes too, you know, and this is part of humility and perspective, is, you know what, the kids in this community, and maybe other communities too. I mean, our football team's playing in the state championship game tomorrow, and you know, there's going to be lots of people watching them. And so kids in all communities, they're going to look up to you because of the name on the front of your jersey. And that's Kimberly. And then as they get to know you, hopefully they love the person that you are. And that's why they continue to look up to you. Because you're going to turn that jersey in after your senior year. And some of you may go on and play college baseball or college football or whatever. But at some point you turn the jersey in and you're going to have something else. And you want people to respect you and kind of gravitate to you because of who you are. And again, I think that goes back to how does faith shape, you know, what I do as a coach is, you know, when I'm not coaching anymore, it's cool to be called coach. I'm pretty proud of that. But it's when I'm not coaching, I still hope to be a positive influence on people because of how I treat people, and not simply because we won a conference championship or because I'm writing the lineup out or any of those other power type, you know, movements that you think you have or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty interesting that you say that. I feel like, I don't know. I think there's some irony here, or at least I feel like there is, but I've felt recently, probably in the past 2 or 3 years, especially, that as the baseball coach, I'm on the front lines of trying to get you to understand that there's more to you than just a baseball player. Because I've seen, and I'm sure you have too, you know, players who aren't necessarily, you know, they aren't necessarily the best player. And there's all this pressure from all these outside forces of, you know, this expectation of you like baseball and you're just going to get to play in college. And I'm so fearful of players who have wrapped their whole identity in, I'm a baseball player. And then, like you said, regardless of how good you are, that day eventually is going to come where you're not playing anymore. And so what's left?
Yeah, darn right.
You know, I think it can be easy for a coach to fail to understand that it's very important that we stress that fact that, you know, baseball is important to me because obviously I'm the baseball coach, but there's a lot of more important things in life than baseball. And while we're here, you know, we're going to do this the right way and we're going to give it everything we have. But, you know, there's a lot more to you than being a baseball player. And I think it's important that guys understand that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think as a parent, I mean, one of the things, you know, my wife and I have talked not a ton about, but a little bit about, you know, with our kids is we hope that we give them strong roots so that they're really well grounded, and that we also give them and help kind of create their wings so they can go off and be their own people. And you don't have to be an arrogant, bad parent to kind of have some some biases that you want your kids to do. And, you know, some of those are the foundation, but the others are like, they're their own people. They don't have to do things the way we did them, or, you know, now again, the foundational things, I sure hope they use their manners, and I sure hope they're respectful and that they love others and that they're inclusive, and that they don't judge based on skin color or type of clothes you wear or gender, or, you know, that they just treat people with love and they try to do that the best they can. And, but then those wings to be free. And as a coach, I feel the same thing. And our foundation has to be, you know, from a baseball coach, now I'm talking strong, a strong sense of how to play the game. A strong sense of kind of knowing the nuances of the game so that you don't feel that pressure, when you're in a game and competing, that it's fun. And, you know, as Peyton Manning said, pressure's when you don't know what the heck's going on. That's pressure. Right. And then the other thing is that we give them that freedom to play it. And I think you touch on that well. You know, when these kids are young, there's kind of an unhealthy pressure there on coaches to, like, make my kid the best and make sure our team at least wins, you know, gets into the championship bracket of the tournament so they play more games. And all for what, man? You got to teach the kids how to play the game. And there's a rhythm to that, and there's a flow to that, and there's a naturalness to that, and there's an uneasiness to that, because they are in control of it. They're the ones playing it. And so, you know, to really do that well is tough. And, you know, I think when you look at a Tony Dungy, you know, Tony Dungy said it awesome after they won the Super Bowl. He said, you know, it's ironic, and it's where my faith has had me well grounded, is when you're losing and you're my demeanor, you're just not tough enough to be a football coach, and you just aren't loud enough, and you just don't have the character, the demeanor to get guys to rally around you in such a violent sport. Then we win the Super Bowl, and then my calm demeanor becomes the reason why we're able to play under pressure, and you just can't get caught up in all that. And so I'm a lot smarter now that we have a Lombardi Trophy. But he had a pretty good run as head coach in Tampa Bay too. It, you know, people kind of fail to realize a little bit. But so I think that's the other part where your faith takes you as a coach or any endeavor is it keeps you grounded in this is what's important, and this is who I am. And I think, you know, that's the other part as a hopefully as a coach that you and I can impact our players with, is we know who we are. And if we know who we are, that doesn't mean we're still not figuring out things about us. That's a lifelong journey. But that's, and so we try to teach that in our program of, man, we just don't want you to have an identity crisis. Know who you are, know what your roots are, know what you're grounded in. And then, you know, as you fly and do different things and impact others, you know, just continue to always understand, you know, who you are. And we talk about that in baseball terms too, is there's 9,422 tweets in the last 30 seconds about different ways to hit. And so you can't have an identity crisis about that. You have to know who you are. And that takes a long time to figure out. And, you know, one of the things I love doing is talking to guys. You know, we had a kid out of our area here who his brother teaches and coaches at Kimberly, but Eric Hinsky played in the big leagues. He's now the hitting coach for the Angels. But he was rookie of the year for the Toronto Blue Jays. And he went to Arkansas and was All-American as a freshman and, you know, had a great career at the University of Arkansas. And he's rookie of the year, and he played another, you know, whatever, 10 years in the big leagues. And so after about 4 or 5 years in the big leagues, I was talking to him, and I'm just like, so tell me this. I just want just one thing from you here real quick. You're All-American at, you know, you're a stud in high school. You go to Arkansas, you're a freshman All-American. You hit 340 or whatever in the SEC as a freshman from Wisconsin. You kind of take the world by storm. Yeah. You go to get to the big leagues, you're rookie of the year, a couple years in. How are you better now than when you were a freshman at Arkansas? And Amy, he didn't even hesitate. He just said, I know myself better. I know what I need to do to prepare. I know what routine gets me in the mode to play a game and stay at a high level, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And isn't that the truth? Oh, you know, talent wise, he's probably less talented in some ways than when he was 21 years old at Arkansas, right. You know, foot speed wise and agility wise and flexibility, maybe, you know, but you're smarter and you understand the game better and you know how to prepare. And so it's the identity crisis that we want to try to keep our kids from having to go through too drastically, that they are well-grounded and they know that continuing to grow, but They don't get caught up in all the, and I think that's especially important in today's world with information overload. And, you know, everybody's got it perfect in at least according to their Snapchat and Twitter feeds, you know.
Well, I'm thinking about, so just a couple more questions here, and thinking specifically with young coaches in mind, if they happen to be listening, what are some unique ways that you think you use your program to have an impact on your guys? Maybe if some young coaches are out there listening, you know, some things that maybe they can adapt and make their own. You know, what's unique at Kimberly?
You know, I think, yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think, you know, I say this again, I don't necessarily want to preface it because that's probably not a good thing to do, but I don't want to come off like it's unique because we're better than, or I'm better than, that's not how I intended. But I think over the years, what I think has become really, really important for us is our coaches asking better questions of our players, and finding out where they're at more frequently. I think I've always been a relationship guy. And I think if you talk to the guys I coached at Xavier University, and, you know, my first 4 years of coaching where I was the same age as some of them. And I think I was always big on relationships and knowing each other and kind of knowing how to push buttons and how to get the most out of guys and caring about them and knowing what's going on at home. But I wasn't as adept at asking the right questions and follow-ups and really getting them to open up. And like you said, very, very pointedly, and I think, well, spot on, to get them uncomfortable. Not uncomfortable in a dangerous way where we're crossing the line and getting personal about, you know, who their girlfriends are and all that other stuff. Not that. And I'm very proud when I was a young coach, I had some very, very pointed conversations with some players sometimes when we were in situations and they were talking like I was one of their buddies. And I just stopped them right in their tracks and said, man, this isn't going there. And, you know, I look back at that and that was easy for me to do, I think, because of how I was raised and where my values were and that my identity wasn't wrapped up in if every guy that I coached loved me every second of the, you know, day. But I can see where that's a very difficult thing for a young coach to do as well. So I'm very proud about that. And I feel it helps me, grow young coaches because I've been there and I've acted appropriately, you know, and so I think we ask better questions. I really think we try to get our kids to focus on positives, and understand that life is all about how you handle adversity. It's all about that. And so the attitude of gratitude that we do every day, I think, is special. It's simple, but it's special. So, you know, a lot of times I think when you talk to coaches, you know, they're looking for a magic bullet and there really isn't. It's the devil's in the details. And so that attitude of gratitude every day and sharing that out and having kids as freshmen, they're saying, well, we're thankful for our weight room, which is great. That's great. And it's nice we put that. But then all of a sudden they're thankful that they were able to eat breakfast that morning with their mom. And they were thankful that their dad grilled out hamburgers on Sunday night and they were able to have a family meal. And it starts getting a little more personal and a little deeper and a little more intricate. And they're thankful for a lot of things that we often were thankful for, the custodian who sweeps the gym floor when we, you know, are practicing indoors, or who cleans the locker room. And so talking about those things not only points out sometimes the obvious, but it makes them think twice before they leave the banana peel in the locker room. So that's special, I think. And I think the other thing is, you know, it's not what you teach, it's what you emphasize. And we take that to heart in our program. So the attitude of gratitude is one thing that we do every day. I think the feedback we get from players and having them write down answers to certain questions and responses, or reading articles together and having them share out and finding time for those things, which is really, really difficult. But finding time for those things shows our kids that it is about what we emphasize, and we emphasize the person. We really, really are into making them better baseball players. But what we really want them to do is understand that baseball is a vehicle to make them a better person and a better teammate and a better
friend and a better husband down the road. You know, those conversations, and I guess one other thing, you know, that I would probably say, I mean, I could go on with several, but, you know, one thing I would definitely recommend to young coaches, which I think, again, just like the attitude of gratitude, it lends itself to starting to get your players to open up, is we do, you know, I got from Brian Kane many years ago, the perspective poster.
Yeah.
So we spend some time on putting the, you know, making a perspective poster of all things that are important to us and things we value and kind of things that make us who we are and keep things in perspective. And then we share those out and, you know, we give them their big copy back, their big poster back or whatever they make, they kind of can choose. And then we make a copy of it that's 5x7 that they put in their playbook. You know, and our playbook is special to our program, our Champions Playbook. You know, again, it's not the only one. It's not something like, oh my gosh, but it's something that I put an absolute boatload of time in, along with our players, sometimes add some things. And through conversations, you know, I get some different ideas and our coaches throw out some different ideas, but through reading articles and seeing different things, and we put it together every year with the concept of this is to try to shape us as better people. And there's a chapter, obviously, on baseball stuff. There's a chapter on the mental part of the game that helps us kind of cope mentally with adversity. And that's the other thing, you know, as a young coach, you know, we talk about blind spots. I was always mentally tough. And I loved the game enough and played it enough and was around enough people and lived and breathed it enough and had a strong enough foundation where I could navigate through those tough times when somebody told me I wasn't good enough or somebody put me down. Or, you know, I remember my 13-year-old all-star coach, one of them, you know, I said I made the team and this is a pretty big deal for me, you know, and I said, shoot, thanks a lot. He goes, don't thank me. You just happen to be a pretty good fielder, but your bat needs a whole lot of work. And, you know, I was like, man, that's a poor way to really build somebody up that you just told made the team. And, you know, you stick that in your hat and it probably was an honest mistake by him. And it has helped me as a coach communicate those things. But our Champions Playbook is really valuable to be a resource because, again, it's what you emphasize is all in those pages. And we deal with those pages every day. And so that perspective poster, that little picture we make goes in there. And anytime I feel like we're, like you're saying, when those, you know, I want those, our guys to play like your 8-year-old son's team. You just explain that. And when I sense that going awry, we say, oh, hold on. It could be the middle of a practice. It can be the third inning of a game. Get out your playbook for 20 seconds and take a look at that. And that typically gets them back to the, you know what? You know, it doesn't for everybody all the time. Don't get me wrong. You know, a kid that's 0 for 12 and he knows you're only playing 26 games and he still wants to get a college offer. And, you know, he's already calculating his batting average because he's thinking he's, you know, not going to hit over 300. It's like, you know, you may not save him that day, but you can follow with him. But it gets most of our guys back on the path of, you know what? It's a game, man. And it's a game to be played by us. It's played by the players. So
that's good. Here's a little more of a personal question, and you can answer it however you want. But just thinking about young coaches, coaching's hard, and the climate is difficult. I think it's getting a little somewhat more difficult with just parents and social media and all those things. So I know one thing that they're interested in hearing is, you know, no doubt throughout your career you've had some struggles, some real struggles as a coach. And if you don't mind, you know, walk us through one of those and how you dealt with it and how it made you a better coach.
Yeah, that's a great question. It really is. And I think, you know, I've coached long enough now. I've had, you know, lots of those. And I think that also is part of the deal, you know, where my faith gets me through that is you look back and you say, you know what? Jesus is 33 years on this earth. We're not pleasant. In a lot of ways. And so it's not easy and it's not supposed to be easy. Not that we have to try to make it more difficult than what it is. We obviously want to simplify things. But if you're doing things right and you're doing things ethically and you're holding people accountable, there are going to be people that kick back because that's part a lot of what people do when they're not comfortable or they don't get their way. You know, again, especially in today's world where when they're paying $2,500 or when they're paying the $60 an hour for lessons, those people are typically not taking those kids out of their comfort zone because they want that check to keep coming. And that's not to say there's not great travel teams. There are, and there are lots of great travel coaches. But there are a lot that are there for the check, and they are not there to hold kids accountable and help grow those kids to be quality, productive members of society. And last time I checked, society holds you accountable pretty dang well. Early on in my, I'll just go real quickly on one of them. Early on in my coaching career, and I won't get into specifics with names, but I volunteer coached a year, and I had two opportunities. I had one opportunity to go coach with my high school coach, and that team was one of the best teams in the state at the time, and it was one of my goals, really, one of my bucket list items to coach with him. And the other opportunity was to coach voluntarily at a school that I was teaching at. We just moved back to Wisconsin. I had coached 4 years of college baseball, knew I wanted to get into high school. And the next step for me at that time was to be with my high school coach and learn from him and be around it and just, you know, have that experience with him that would be priceless. And the school I was coaching at was probably one of the worst teams in the state. Hadn't won a game in 2 years. And, it was, you know, struggling with numbers and same conference as my high school coach's team. And as I'm teaching at that school, I'm thinking, you know what, man, that's the easy path right there. That's the path of least resistance to go and coach with my high school coach, right? You're going with the best and going to beat up on everybody. So I took the opportunity to volunteer at this program and it wasn't what I had bargained for. I had talked to the coach he was a good guy, but what was kind of portrayed to me and what was were two different things. I mean, there was no accountability and there wasn't much organization. And, the inmates were running the asylum, for lack of a better description. And so we go through and I was as loyal as I could possibly be. And that's another thing that I have been very proud of, is I was a loyal coach at Xavier for 4 years to my former head coach. And that was easy because, you know, he believed in the right things and he was the guy I looked up to. And that was pretty easy. We certainly had some philosophical differences on some things, how to go about some practice things, but we could air those out behind closed doors and he had the final say. And I totally got that, you know? And so that was easy, but being a loyal assistant coach in this year was really, really a challenge. And, you know, thank God I have an awesome wife. And so I would kind of vent to her and that was it. I wouldn't vent to anybody else, but I was biting my tongue and I was counting the time every day. Like, this is brutal. And so when that season ended, you know, I was looking to potentially go coach my high school coach the following year. And then the coach resigned and I wasn't even going to apply for the job because the program was not in a good state of affairs. And I didn't make a real great relationship with a lot of those players because a lot of those players didn't want to be there. And it wasn't baseball the way I knew it. It was kind of screw off with your buddies and then go expect to have an upset or two. And if you won, and they won no games that year. And so, have an upset or two. And if you win one or two games, or even if you're close, that's kind of a win. And it was just totally anti to me. So the following year, I did apply and I got the job. And there was a kickback from about four or five of those parents that they didn't want me as the head coach. And one of them said in the newspaper, you know, he's not worthy of an athlete's trust. And that one hurt, man. That was like, it hurt not because of who said it. It hurt because it's like, man, that's in the paper and that's what someone trying to do to describe me. And I feel very different than that. I think I'm very worthy of an athlete's trust or anybody's trust. Most of all, the parents' trust. You know, we tell our parents every year, the greatest thing you can give to us is trust us with your kids. And we ask for nothing more. I don't ask you to go praise me to your neighbors or write the newspaper and say how great we are as a staff. If you entrust us with your sons and allow us to coach them, I don't need a gift at the end of the year banquet. That's the gift. And that's a priceless gift. Because there's no greater thing than when I hand my kids off to other people that they're in good hands. And when they are, that's priceless. So I want to be that person as well, where parents feel very, very blessed and comfortable and grateful that their sons are in my hands and my coaching staff's hands. So that was a difficult time, but thankfully I had a athletic director who was very supportive and some teachers at the school who were influential and supportive. And I'll tell you, man, it was a great journey at that school. I was a head coach then for 5 years and
you know, one of those players is coaching with me now and a counselor in Kimberly. And another one of those players just did the flyover. He's in the Air Force. He's a pilot, just did the flyover at the Packer game last week. I'm just very proud. We won a conference championship a few years later for the first conference championship in that school's history, Oshkosh North. And that group is really, really tight. And we built some really special things there relationship wise. So, but that was a tough time and a trying time. You know, when you read that comment in the paper, I'm not sure it gets much tougher than that. And so as you grow, you know, you still have people. And now that I'm an athletic director and a baseball coach and kind of a veteran, you know, and had some success, people still take shots at you at times and try to, you know, out of whatever reason, spite or envy or you know, they different perspective or whatever. It hurts, you know, and anytime someone questions your integrity but, you know, again, so young coaches, I would say that's where your faith comes in is, you know, I'm a baseball coach, but I'm much more than the baseball coach. And it's really important to me that I'm able to work with young people. I think I have a lot to offer, but more important than that, they have a lot to offer me. And I think collectively we can really have some fun times and really grow together and really try to become the best versions of ourselves that we can be. So that's something that I think, you know, athletic director has helped me with that part of it to say, man, you have to have a perspective because it, you know, you kind of want to be praised as a coach because you do go through some negatives and you need people to tell you, you know what, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. And I think doctors need that. Garbage people need that. You know, I mean, I, you know what, when I start feeling sorry for myself as a coach, I'm saying, you know what, how many times have I run home from work on Thursdays, which is when our garbage is taken out, and thank those guys for what they do. How many times have I left a note on the garbage thing saying, man, I appreciate you guys taking this every week and leaving it clean when you return those barrels. You know, I don't do that. And that's something we probably should do, but so I think as coaches and teachers and educators, we have to be careful sometimes where we feel like, man, we don't get enough credit. We don't get enough praise. And the praise comes from our players and how they respond to us, that they're still engaged and that they believe in the bigger picture of what we're doing. And when they don't, how do we get them back on the train? You know, as John Gordon says, the energy bus. I mean, you know, how do we keep them on that bus? Because it's easy to kick them off the bus and say, man, next, you know. But we're trying to impact these young people, and we have to make sure we're trying to take every avenue that we can. And there's certainly a time to say, get off the bus. You need to do that because one person can spoil a ride for sure. But I think as the leaders of that, we have to make sure that culture is healthy with a free flow of communication and that the values that make up that culture are upheld every day.
That is some good stuff. I appreciate you sharing that. This is going to be our Thanksgiving episode, so to speak. And you kind of talked about being thankful earlier, but what are you thankful for?
Oh, goodness. I'm so thankful for my wife. I'm thankful for my four healthy kids. I'm thankful that every day, you know, one of the most important times for me every day is, in the morning is when I do it for sure. And then sometimes I'll do it later in the day too, but just that time to quiet time to read my devotion and read some passages and, you know, just grow as we talk about when we pray with our kids at night, that we take time every morning because we try to have our kids read their devotion in the morning. And, you know, that's kind of a balance act where I don't want to force it upon them. I want it to be their choice, but I want them to get into good habits. And we're very grateful for that time to grow our relationship with God, and that needs to be nurtured every day. You can't get far away from that. You know, we are what we fill our hearts and minds with. And so I'm very thankful to be able to do that. And as you talked about before, you know, asking who, you know, who's kind of been the influences. I'm so thankful to have had so many people who have guided me and directed me in the right way. But as I look at that, it's really been God. It's been God's hand and all of that. And that's the other part when people write me a thank you note or send me a note or tell me that this or that, or, you know, I get an email the other day from the mom of this former player of mine who I'm really, really close with, who's flying over and she's telling me, man, you know, hope you can see him when he comes in. And you're thinking, man, you know, that is pretty cool that they would think of emailing me to tell me that or texting me or whatever. But you know what? That's God's hand. And that's really, really what it is. It's, you know, the biggest struggle we have is probably as humans, but certainly as coaches, when we think we have control over all the details, it's God's plan. And something else we pray about just about every night with our kids, we say, we pray that we're good listeners and that we take time to just stop and listen to God and try to see what he's telling us and try to hear what he's telling us and sometimes try to figure out what he's telling us. But if we're quiet long enough, we will hear it. And we need to do that. It's easy to just kind of go and think you're listening to him when really all you're doing is asking. So I love, something I did when my son is now 15, almost 16, but when he was real young, every night, from when he was about one to probably five, every single night. Now we're in Wisconsin. We didn't live out in the country, but we lived, you know, in a place where there weren't a lot of streetlights, which was nice. And so, man, even when it was 10 below and blowing out, we'd bundle up and I'd take him outside before he went to bed and we'd look up and he'd say, "Good night, moon. Good night, stars. We love you, God." And then we'd go in and say our prayers. But some nights we'd stand out there longer than others, and it was just peaceful looking up at those stars. And there's something very powerful and emotional and tranquil and spiritual about that. And so I'm thankful for all of that, you know, that God has put me in such a position to just have such good people in my life and have a good foundation of hopefully being a positive, so that when I do meet him, that he says, "You've done well, my good and faithful servant."
Well, as we wrap up here, I just want to give you the floor, you know, for just a couple of minutes, and you can be the athletic director or you can be the baseball coach, but if you've got just a couple of minutes to share one more thing or just one more tidbit to young coaches out there.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say more than ever, but I guess now's the time. So why not say more than ever? The past is in the past, but we need positive quality coaches, educators, influences. And sports is such a wonderful vehicle for that. And so I think as a young coach or even as a veteran coach, continue to remember that sports is really just a vehicle to help these young men and women or young boys and girls, whatever age you're coaching, become better citizens. And that when they're done playing, that they can look back. And again, one of the things I'm super, super thankful for is that my dad, though he was a coach, and my mom, though she was, you know, a pretty stubborn, competitive, spirited person, they allowed us to play the game. And never, and I can say never, did I come home or leave a field or come home from a game and have a sit down of, "Why did you do this?" Never. Not in the car ride home, not in the living room, not right outside the dugout, never. Nor did my dad ever try to critique and break me down. And not when I say break me down, like break down my swing or break down my throw. And he would hit ground balls to us about every day and hit fly balls to us. And we'd go to the high school, which was just a half block away, to the open field and hit just about every day. And he never critiqued. Now, again, I get times were different then and there wasn't as much video and there weren't as many talk shows and all that other stuff. But I believe if it were today, he wouldn't either, because he got the idea that it's playing the game is what makes it special. It's not, as coaches, and one of the things we talk about as a staff, and I think as a coach, you have to know your identity. And our staff's identity is to be as knowledgeable, thorough, detailed, and information overloaded as we possibly can be, so that we can break it down for the players and keep it simple. So in order to keep something simple, you need to really know it inside and out. And so we work hard behind the scenes as coaches so that when it comes to the players, we can keep it simple and we can keep it one nugget at a time. So when we're teaching, we're not teaching seven things at a time to show the guys how smart we are. And I think that's tough. If you're a young coach right now, you know, these kids have instructors and you know, coaches and private coaches and second private coaches and the parents at home sometimes. And so you got to try to almost win them with your knowledge. And I think you have to be careful with that and say you'll win them by how much you care about them. And they will see that you know what you're talking about, but they first need to see you care. They need to know that you care, and they need to know that you're human. And so you're not always right. And be human, but be prepared. They also going to know if you're an idiot and you're just winging it. So those are things I guess I would say is, you know, again, talk about what I've been blessed with is parents that allowed me to play the game, because I look at how much baseball has been a part of my game or about part of my life, you know. And I said in that ABCA podcast, you know, I'm shocked as I look back at it that my parents let me in the clubhouse of the, you know, I was bat boying when I was 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, you know, I'm dipping skull when I was 5, you know, and swallowing it and puking. And, but you know what? I never dipped or chewed once I was past 7, you know? And, but what my parents did was they had that roots of knowing what's right and wrong. And so I'm in that clubhouse, man. And I gravitated to guys that did things right. And I gravitated on Sundays at chapel of who was going, and you know who my favorite players were? Those guys that were going to chapel. And, you know, and sometimes guys would go to chapel and then they'd act like, you know, Nimrods, and you're thinking that doesn't add up. They're cussing and doing everything, and yet they're at chapel. And that's all part of life, is we're all human. That's why, you know, that's the trick. That's the irony. That's the paradox. We're human, and we sin, and we make mistakes, and we have to try to be better. And so it really taught me at a young age that, man, even these guys who are put up on a pedestal, they shouldn't be. And there's one pedestal, and that's for Lord and Savior. And otherwise, it's all of us trying to just help each other to be the best versions of ourselves we can be.
That's awesome, man. I really appreciate you, Coach. I know that our time is valuable, and I want to wish you the best this upcoming season, and maybe we can cross paths at the ABCA. And
yeah, I'd love to do that. You going?
I am going. I will be there.
Well, I'll make sure. I'll put it on my thing. I'll look you up. I appreciate it.
Well, again, thanks for joining us. And, man, it was awesome.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I wish you the best, not only with your team, but more importantly with your family. And keep taking care of those boys of yours.
Thanks again for joining us this week. And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe as we attempt to grow our community. And also, check out our website at ultimategroundrules.wixsite.com/website, where you can find information about our weekly Bible studies each Monday morning. And until next week, stand firm in the faith.